In A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens wrote in the preface, "I have endeavoured in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my reader out of humour with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it. Their faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens, December 1843. A Christmas Carol, Stave 1, Marley's Ghost. As this is a ghost story for Christmas, it is important that you understand that Marley was dead. If you don't understand that, nothing that follows will make any sense. So I repeat, Marley was dead to begin with. Once upon a time, of all the good days of the year, on Christmas Eve, there was cold, bleak, biting weather with a thick fog covering London. It was the 7th anniversary of old Marley's death, and his business partner, Ebenezer Scrooge, hadn't changed his ways. He was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, hard and sharp as flint, secret, self-contained, and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, stiffened his gait, made his eyes red, his thin lips blue, and spoke out shrewdly in his grating voice. When his nephew saw him and said, "Ha! A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" Scrooge could only reply, "Bah! Humbug!" before adding, "If I had my way, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart." His clerk, Bob Cratchit, was working in a small room where just one small coal on the fire gave no warmth whatsoever. But he couldn't add to it, as Scrooge kept the coal bucket by his desk, and if he were to appear with a shovel, Bob knew Scrooge would sack him on the spot. Instead, he tried to warm himself on the candle, in which effort, not being a man of strong imagination, he failed. At the end of the day, Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers and finished work counting all the money in his banking books, he went home. It was in his sitting room that Scrooge first heard the ghost of old Marley when he heard the sounds of something heavy being dragged up the stairs. When the ghost appeared, he was covered in a great trail of chains that weighed him down. The ghost explained, "I wear the chains I forged in life. Is its pattern strange to you, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as full and heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You've laboured on it since. You have your own ponderous chain about you too." "Jacob! Oh, Jacob Marley, tell me more! Speak comfort to me, Jacob!" said a frightened Scrooge. "I have nothing to give. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope escaping my fate. You will be haunted by 3 more ghosts."
"Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob?"
"It is. Expect the first tonight when the bell tolls 1. Expect the 2nd on the next night at the same hour. The 3rd upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that, for your own sake, you remember what I have told you." When it had said these words, the ghost walked backwards from him and floated through the window into the bleak, dark night. Scrooge tried to say, "Humbug," but couldn't, and whether it was because he was tired after a long day at work or the visit from the ghost, he went straight to bed and fell asleep on the instant. Stave 2, the ghost of Christmas past. Scrooge awoke as the church clock dulled a deep, dull, melancholy one. Light flashed up in the room, and he found himself face to face with a strange figure, like a child, yet also like an old man with a ghostly presence about him.
"Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold to me?"
asked Scrooge. "I am the ghost of Christmas past."
"Long past?"
"No, your past. The things you will see are shadows of the things that have been. Rise and walk with me." Scrooge rose, but finding the spirit was heading towards the window, he thought he would fall. "Touch my hand there," said the spirit, laying it upon his heart. "And you won't fall." As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and out into the country, and in the distance there was a little market town with its church and its school. The school was not quite deserted. A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left there still. At one of the desks, the lonely boy is reading near a feeble fire. Scrooge sat down and wept to see himself as a boy, forgotten as he had used to be. Next, the ghost stopped at a warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
"Know it? I used to work here when I was younger."
They went in, and Scrooge cried in excitement when he recognised his old boss.
"Why, it's old Fezziwig, bless his heart! It's old Fezziwig alive again!"
"Yo-ho, my boys! No more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Ebenezer. It's time for our works party. Let's have the shutters right now. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here."
Well, clear away? There was nothing they wouldn't have cleared away with old Fezziwig looking on. It was done in a minute, and they made a bright and beautiful ballroom for everyone who worked at the warehouse. In came a fiddler with his violin, and soon the music meant everyone was dancing. Some boldly, some gracefully, and some awkwardly. With cold roast meat and mince pies and beer, what a party it was! But when the clock chimed 11, the party broke up. "My time with you grows short," said the ghost once again. Scrooge saw himself, a man in his prime, sitting next to a fair young girl at the party, and in whose eyes were tears.
"Spirit, show me no more. Why do you delight to torture me?"
"One shadow more," replied the ghost. Suddenly they were in another place, a comfortable room filled with a large and boisterous family. Near to the fire sat a beautiful young girl, so like the last that Scrooge believed it was the same, until he saw the girl from the party, now a mother, sitting opposite her daughter. When he thought that once this young girl might have called him father, his sight grew very dim indeed. A man turned to the older lady and said,
"I saw an old friend of yours this afternoon."
"Who?" she asked.
"Mr. Scrooge. I passed his office window. There he sat, quite alone in the world."
Scrooge could watch no more and shouted,
"Remove me, haunt me no longer."
And as Scrooge struggled with the ghost, he was conscious of being exhausted and of being in his own bedroom, and had barely time to fall into bed before he sank into a deep sleep. Stave 3. The Ghost of Christmas Present. Scrooge awoke in the middle of a very loud a snore. In the centre of a blaze of ruddy light, the bell struck one again, and curious, he got up and softly shuffled in his slippers to the door.
"Come in, come in! I am the ghost of Christmas Present. Look upon me and know me better."
It was his own room, but it had undergone an amazing transformation. The walls and ceiling were hung with holly, mistletoe, and ivy. A mighty blaze went roaring up the chimney, and heaped upon the floor, forming a kind of throne, were turkeys, geese, game, great joints of meat, pies, puddings, immense cakes, luscious fruits, and steaming bowls of punch. And on the throne sat a jolly giant who bore a flaming torch held high.
Spirit, take me where you will. Last night I learnt a lesson which is already working now. Tonight, if you have anything to teach me, do it now and let me benefit.
Touch my robe, said the ghost.
Scrooge did as he was told, and was led straight to the house that belonged to his clerk. On the threshold of the door, the spirit smiled and stopped to bless Bob Cratchit's home with the sprinkling of his torch. Once inside, they saw the Cratchits bustling about their modest kitchen in anticipation of the Christmas feast to come. Bob took his younger son, Tiny Tim, and helped him to sit in a corner at the table, while the two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody. Poor Tiny Tim was terribly ill, and had to use a crutch to walk, as his sickness made him very weak. At last the feast was ready, and after grace was said, Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it in the breast. But when she did, and the gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight went around the table, and even Tiny Tim managed to feebly cry, "Hurrah!" There never was such a goose. And eked out by the apple sauce and mashed potatoes, it was a sufficient dinner for the whole family. Now Mrs. Cratchit left the room to bring in the Christmas pudding, and oh, what a wonderful pudding it was! Everyone had something to say about it. At last, with the dinner done, Bob Cratchit served hot wine from a jug and proposed, "A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us."
"God bless us, everyone," said Tiny Tim.
"Spirit," said Scrooge with an interest he had never felt before, "tell me if Tiny Tim will live."
"I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner carefully preserved."
"No, no," said Scrooge. "Oh, no, kind spirit, say he will be spared."
"If things remain unaltered by the future, no one will find him here. You once said, if he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population."
Scrooge hung his head in shame as the ghost showed him many more houses where many more poor people were managing to have a happy Christmas day. They stood by sick beds and the people were cheerful. On foreign lands and close to home, struggling men, despite their poverty, were rich from good cheer.
"Look! Look down here!" exclaimed the ghost.
Kneeling at its feet were a boy and a girl. Wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable, prostrate in their humility.
"Spirit, are they yours?"
asked Scrooge.
"They are man's," replied the ghost. "And they cling to me. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both, but most of all, beware this boy."
"Have they no refuge or resource?"
cried Scrooge, catching the ghost's hand, but the spirit, stronger than he, shook it off. He looked back at the ghost and saw its hair was turning grey.
"My life on this globe is very brief," said the ghost. "It ends tonight at midnight."
As they stood together, the bell struck 12. Scrooge looked for the ghost but couldn't see it. As the last chime struck, he remembered the prediction of old Marley, and lifting his eyes, saw a solemn phantom of a new ghost, draped and hooded, coming like a mist upon the ground towards him. Stave 4, The Last of the Spirits. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which the spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and misery.
"Am I in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come?" asked Scrooge.
The spirit didn't answer, but pointed with its hand.
"Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any of the others I've seen."
The phantom led him to an obscure part of town. The ways were foul and narrow, the shops and houses wretched, the people half naked, drunken, slipshod, ugly. The whole quarter reeked with crime, with filth and misery.
"Spirit,"
Scrooge said,
"this is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lessons. Trust me, let us go."
The spirit then led them to the Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before. It was quiet, very quiet. The noisy little Cratchits were as still as statues in one corner when their father came through the door.
"Sunday? You went today then, Robert?"
asked his wife. "Yes, my dear," returned Bob. "I wish you could have gone. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday." "My little, little child," cried Bob. "My little child." He broke down all at once. He couldn't help it. Mrs. Cratchit kissed him, his daughters kissed him, and Peter and himself shook hands. "Spirit of Tiny Tim, thy childish essence was from God."
"Spectre," said Scrooge, "something informs me that our parting is at hand."
Once more the spirit led Scrooge away towards a churchyard overrun by grass and weeds. The spirit stood amongst the graves and pointed down to one.
"Before I draw near to the stone you are pointing at, answer me one question," said Scrooge. "Are these the shadows of things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be, unless I change my ways?"
Still the ghost pointed down toward the grave by which it stood. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the finger read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
"Oh, no, spirit! Oh, no, no, spirit! Hear me! I'm not the man I was! I will not be the man I must have been before tonight! Why show me all this if I'm beyond hope?"
Holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration on the phantom's hood and cloak. The spirit shrank, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Stave 5. The end of it. Yes, the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own, and the room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time ahead of him was his own. Time to make amends.
"I will live in the past, present, and the future. The spirits of all three ghosts shall live within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, thank you for this lesson. I say it on my knees, Jacob. Thank you."
His hands were busy with his garments all this time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down, tearing them down, mislaying them.
"I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. I'm as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas, everybody! A Happy New Year to all the world!" "What's today?"
cried Scrooge out of the window to a boy in his best clothes.
"Today?"
replied the boy.
"Why, Christmas Day."
"It's Christmas Day,"
said Scrooge.
"I haven't missed it. The spirits did it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can, of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow."
"Hello,"
replied the boy.
"Do you know the butcher's in the next street but one at the corner?"
"I should hope I did,"
replied the lad.
"Ah, an intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know if they've sold the prize turkey? Not the little prize turkey, but the big one."
"What, the one as big as me?"
"Well, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, that's the one."
"He's hanging there now,"
replied the boy.
"Is it?"
said Scrooge.
"Go and buy it now. I really mean it. Go and buy it. Tell them to bring it here so that I can give directions of where it's to be delivered. Do it quickly, and I'll give you a fine reward. I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's house. He won't know who sent it. It'll be twice the size of Tiny Tim."
Scrooge dressed in his very best clothes, and after getting out of the house, took himself to church. In the afternoon, he turned towards his nephew's house, where he knocked on the door.
"Why, bless my soul," said Nephew Fred. "We weren't expecting anyone."
"It is I, your Uncle Scrooge. I've come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?"
Let him in. It's a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. He was made to feel at home immediately, and a wonderful party ensued. Wonderful games, wonderful unanimity, wonderful happiness.
And next day he frightened Bob Cratchit out of his skin by being so jolly. A merry Christmas, Bob! A merrier Christmas than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary immediately and endeavour to assist your struggling family. Stoke up the fires, Bob. Make sure you put plenty of coal on them and come and join me for a drink. Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was like a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He never saw the ghosts again, but they had taught him all he needed to know. It was always said of Scrooge that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that truly be said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.